Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with writers in the studios of North State Public Radio. Now here's your host, Nancy Wiegman.
Randall Green likes to explore new cultures. Even though he likes traveling with others, he typically travels by himself. He says initially he chose to travel by himself because he was working several jobs and didn't have a lot of time to travel. These days, he takes traveling solo as a badge of honor. Even though he likes traveling with others, he says he's learned more about himself as a soloist. Randall Green has now written a book for people who want to travel solo, Smart and Solo, the Blueprint for Efficient and Enjoyable Solo Travel, but his tips are helpful for people who do not travel alone. Randall Green, welcome. Well, you mentioned in your book that you were working several jobs, you didn't have a lot of time to travel, didn't have a lot of advanced notice sometimes when you say, hey, you want to go to Detroit? And a friend was not likely to say, well, yeah, Randall. So what kind of jobs were you doing then?
Well, one of my first goals was to see all 30 of the major league ballparks in baseball. And again, the problem with baseball, so many of the cities are kind of older cities in the United States on the eastern part. And they're not really tourist destinations. Wonderful places. I've had excellent times there. But when trying to find people to go with me, you know, hey, would you like to go to Detroit this Tuesday? Or, hey, if not Detroit, how about Baltimore? And those places, again, great places. I love them. But they're not as popular and it's hard to get people to go with me. So initially, I just started doing things on my own and it expanded into doing more international trips down the road.
Well, you also have dual passport citizenship. UK and United States. So is that helpful as a traveler?
Kind of, sort of. I think first of all, it helps me just my mindset, because growing up just in dual cultures, I was always kind of fascinated with just other areas. Now, it does help me in one area when it comes to just getting through customs. When you're landing in Europe and you have a European passport, you can get through quicker. Aside from that, it's not too beneficial. It's more of just something I can brag about and talk about. That great conversation starter. And I clearly make sure that every time I sit down in an airport, restaurant, or bar, I always make sure that both the passports are there, prop side up, so everybody can see that. Just hopefully this kicks some conversation started.
Well, you're kind of preaching to the choir when you talk about the value of travel, but you have three reasons that you think people should travel. What are your three reasons, Randall?
Every single person on Earth has these three reasons, and it's built into our DNA. It's the reason why if you see for the first time a toddler walks outside and they immediately sprint, because it's the exploration. And those three reasons, first of all, is an education. You learn something. Every trip you take, even if it's just a small trip, 20 minutes down the road, you learn something new about the area. The second one is adventure. It gives you fun. You have an opportunity to go and it's anything that could be entertaining and fun with that. And the third, and I think it might be the most important, is that it provides opportunity, from sailors in the past going for new riches, for a possibility of a new career, a new job. You never know what's on the horizon. The sun will rise tomorrow. You don't know what it can bring in. So just seeing what's across the horizon is just going to give you opportunity. For me, it's kind of what I'm always searching for, to find something new somewhere across the way. Maybe it's a new career. Maybe it's a new something. A new person I meet, but there's just that opportunity, and it's that fuels the desire to continue to travel.
My guest is Randall Green, and his book is Smart and Solo, the Blueprint for Efficient and Enjoyable Solo Travel. And I mentioned that your book has tips for any traveler, no matter whether traveling alone or with somebody else. What tip do you think is the most valuable? Well, all your tips are valuable, though. Where would you start with recommending what people consider?
Yeah, and again, I started as a solo traveler. It wasn't my initial goal, so the idea of just having this book be valuable for everybody, I think first is just, I can pause real quick, is keeping the idea of that this is a limited resource, and that every place we travel, we need to make sure that we are leaving it better than we found it. That's part goal number one. And part two, I would say, as far as just for any traveler, is respecting other cultures and understanding the value of other cultures. That while you're out there, to let things go and to relax and to not stress about things. For instance, we've all been in times where you're getting off the airplane, everybody's rushing out, and let the person go in front of you. There's only one plane. You're all going to the same terminal. Let people out in front of you and just relax and understand that different cultures bring different things. There might be one culture where there's someone standing extremely close to you. And the first time that encountered me, I was kind of upset. Like, why is this person standing so close to me? But then you realize that other cultures, that could be a normal thing. That the Western, in the United States, they're having that big personal space bubble. That's not something that exists in the entire world. So having an open mind and realizing that you can learn so much from all these different cultures, that'd be another thing I would say to any type of traveler.
Well, you know, speaking of that distance, that some cultures are comfortable with a closer distance than others, I was rather surprised in your book, you gave the voice to a flight attendant, and the question was, what unpleasant passenger behaviors bother you the most? And I was rather surprised because I don't touch the flight attendants, but the attendant said, first and most important, do not touch your flight attendants. I thought, gosh, there are passengers who touch the attendants. And what else did the attendant say? You remember, Rand?
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? Things that we would never think about doing, but she wrote it in capital letters. This is Haley. I met Haley in Amsterdam. There were a whole pack of flight attendants were in there, and I just started chatting with them. And the very first thing she said, first and foremost, do not touch your flight attendants, in all caps. And she says she gets touched every flight that happens. Other things she mentioned is just the etiquette. She says that people, seems that once they get on the plane, they think they're in a little hole and they forget all of their personal decencies. She says, you know, keep your clothes on.
Oh, that was one that surprised me too.
Yeah, keep your socks on. And
she says that includes coming up behind us, we're in the aisle, and standing right on top of us. There's no sense in it. Please.
Helicoptering above people as you walk. And it's some of those things that I've never done, but obviously they fly a lot more than I do.
Yeah.
And so it was amazing to hear that, these conversations, and just so many things that she told me, even things she didn't write about in our conversation I wrote in the book. It's amazing some of the things you see. And that's why I love meeting some other people, because it shines a light on some of the poor behaviors we might not even know we're doing.
Yeah, she says, kindly wait for us to get out of the aisle, out of your way, by leaving at least 3 feet between us. I don't want to feel your breath on my neck. Don't like for you to feel you hovering, and I don't want you to touch me. So that just seems like common sense, but I guess sometimes that goes out the door and people climb on a plane.
Well, we've all seen the horror stories where people are doing something that, whether it be bringing a certain food or whatever it is, we've all seen it, and it exists. And I think that's why that mindset of understanding that you've got to leave this place in a better place than you found it. Even with the flight attendants, one thing I like to do is bring a little small gift, a box of chocolates for the flight attendants. Just show them that I appreciate you, and I know you're going through a lot. I've seen some things you're going through, and I've also, from what I've heard. So just leaving every person you encounter, just try to make their day better as well in your travels.
Well, you had something in your book that made me feel a little bit better, because so often when I travel, I encounter kindness from people, strangers, that are so kind it brings tears to my eyes. And you quote Jimmy Valvano. You might say who he is, but in a talk he said, every day you should laugh, think, cry. And I thought, oh, okay. He says it's okay to shed some tears.
Yeah, Jimmy Valvano, he was the NCAA basketball coach for NC State, and they won the national title. And unfortunately, he passed away from cancer. And he's known for the Jimmy V Foundation on ESPN, which they have. But he had one of his famous speeches. He said, we should laugh, we should think, we should cry. And he goes, that's a full day. That's a heck of a day. And for me, I think that all those are part of what happens when you travel. You are going to laugh, and that's part of that just happiness of travel. There are going to be times that frustrate you, which could be part of the tears, but also it could be good tears. For instance, when you sit down and you watch The Phantom of the Opera in the West End in London, seeing that can move you to the point of tears, and that's an experience that you don't really get in your day-to-day life. And then the final thing he said on that is that you should think every day. And I know that sounds easy, like, of course we all think, but do we superficially just think about, you know, what I want to eat, what should I get from the store, what time am I off work? Or do we really deep and think about our deep problems, our deep ambitions, our deep goals, our deep loves? And travel, you're gonna have opportunity to think the entire time. And during that time, you should embrace it and really look forward to the idea of thinking about who you are as a person, what you wanna do. Because there's gonna be lots of times you're waiting in line, and you need to use it to, as value. And you'll realize that just walking through terminals and maybe the long walk to the metro, that some of the best ideas you've ever had come through that. And Nietzsche makes a quote on the same thing, that all Nietzsche says that pretty much all great ideas are achieved through walking. And you're going to have an opportunity to think a ton while you're traveling. So embrace it.
Yeah, I wrote down that quote by Nietzsche because I hadn't encountered it before. But I know people who walk the Camino de Santiago de Compostela would agree with you there. Nietzsche, I'm going to repeat what you just said. All truly great thoughts are conceived by walking. And whether it's walking or not, that's a wonderful opportunity to slow down, because even bicycling seems fast. After you've been a pilgrim and you walk at a walking pace every day, even bicycling seems too fast. And you say, imagine what you want to do next in life, discover true interest, and decide what you don't like doing anymore. Because I think so often we get in a routine, we get up and we do the same thing, and we don't stop to say, is this really what I want to be doing with my life?
Yeah, it's another reason I think that travel does these things, because when you're out there walking and you've seen this other parts of the world, for one, yes, we talked about how it's great, it's opportunity to think, but when you see these amazing sights, you start thinking, you know, I want to do this more often, which means I don't want to do some of these other things. I need to get rid of this in my life and get rid of this. And I want to do, and it just, the creativity that your mind goes and the imagination. Another thing I mention in there all the time is I say daydream. Just, and that's what you're going to be doing as you're walking. And, you know, find out who you are and think, this is a great trip. How can I do more of this? How can, maybe I can't travel, but how can I live a full life? How can I find other ways to just be happy and to be creative and to just make the world a better place? So many of the things that I've done as I've traveled, I've made it a habit to bring them back with me back home. So when I first started, I was very antsy and full of, and I was ready to, you know, hustle off the plane, this and that. But over time, it became more calm. And then I realized, let's take that calmness, put it to my everyday life. Let's take that aspect of trying to make all my trips a better. Let's take that and make it in my everyday life and do more volunteer activities. And let's take all that time to what I am thinking. Let's make sure that every day I spend a portion of my day thinking. So I think you can learn on those trips because of the time of isolation, and then you can come back home and you can be a better person for it.
Yeah, I think it's the break in routine, because if you stay at home in the same routine, you don't have a chance to step out of that rut. I'm going to call it rut. It might not be, but a chance to step away from it. A lot of times after I've traveled and I come home and think, gosh, why did I put that chair there or the table there? I could rearrange it. I come back with fresh eyes so that when I do come back to my, if I want to call it normal routine, I see it with different eyes.
Yeah, completely.
My guest is traveler Randall Green, and he encourages people to travel solo if that works for them. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. Our topic today is traveling, and especially the solo traveler. If you've been hesitant to try traveling solo, then listen to the tips that Randall Green has for you.
First of all, I say travel light for any traveler, because it just makes things easier. Try to limit yourself to a carry-on in your small personal item. I know if you got to go to a long trip and everything, but how many times have you packed things? You may pack those extra running shoes and you're like, you know what, it'd be great. I'm going to run along the Thames when I'm in London, but you don't run, right? So there's so many times we overpack. And I think that I would take what you normally pack and reduce it to 30%. And traveling light will just make everything more easy. First of all, number one thing, more affordable, but also it's more practical. try taking a bunch of suitcases on the cobblestone paths in Rome. It's miserable. So if you can isolate just and have minimal things, and then in that practice of minimizing, you're going to then see just how little you actually need. There's been times where I've just had a backpack in a foreign country, and you realize if I can go through a different country with just a backpack, I have way too much stuff back home. So I find that I've isolated and minimized things back home. I've gotten rid of clothes, gotten rid of things I don't use. And it's just the practice of knowing and doing and experiencing with minimal options, so this kind of form minimalism, that you realize how little you actually need. And I know kind of my mom will tease me about that I keep getting rid of things. And it's just like, well, it's just the mindset I've created as through all these travels. So travel light for anyone. And once you do so, it's a good experiencing finding out how little you actually need. It's very liberating.
I find too that I've been traveling for over 50 years and I keep reducing. And even my last trip, I thought, gosh, I brought too many socks. And so even now I find, gosh, I could have gotten by with less. And traveling with just a backpack, you feel so much freer. I remember coming back from China and in customs and people thought, you went all the way to China for a few weeks and with a backpack? But I think people don't realize often how little they do need and how freeing it is.
Even as you and I, as experienced travelers, as we start bringing less and less, there's always someone on our same flight who has even less than us. So there's always more to aim for.
Yeah. And you mentioned giving things away while you're there. And you also mentioned reading books, now real books as opposed to electronic books. And what I often do, I get behind, say, on issues of The New Yorker. And so I pack them because then when I'm finished, I just give them away if they're English speakers. So pass on books. That I've read and give them away. But another thing, and I didn't see this in your book, that often you can get new reading material just at the laundromat, or an Airbnb will have a little section, shelves of books that people leave and then you take too. So that's another way you don't have to pack a bunch of heavy books.
Exactly. And it's some of the most charming things. When I was in Reykjavik, I saw the exact same thing at Airbnb, these little small thing of books. And it was wonderful. You can sit and read for a little bit. And then I said to myself, I got to make sure I bring books back to here in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you encourage people to travel too, because you say you don't know what you like until you try it yourself. I remember once I had a little retreat place in the mountains, and the neighbor up higher on the hill had an asparagus plant in his yard as a decoration. And we asked him if he liked asparagus, and he said no. First he said no, and then he said, well, I've never tried it. So I think a lot of people are that way about travel. They don't know they might like it unless they try it.
Well, think about your favorite foods, right? Think about, you didn't know you liked your favorite food until you had it. I know that sounds basic to say it. It's simple mindset, but it's true. So many things in our life and so many things we put off. You know, how many times growing up maybe I didn't like sushi because it gets made fun of all the time. Oh, it's cold fish. Who wants to eat that? And it's always the butt of jokes. Then you have it. This is wonderful. It's been all my life. And not just food, but everything. And for me, someone, I was never interested in going to the art museum and going to museums. But then the first time you go, you're in Florence and you see the Birth of Venus. So the first time you see the David in Florence, it'll change your life to the point where you're looking for museums constantly. And or you want to attend another musical. You want to attend the opera. And I didn't know I liked those things, but when you're there, it's overwhelming in a great way. And it's one of the best things is seek out other things that you might not like, that you've never tried. And I know, you know, people always say you won't like it if you try it, but it's a way to live when you travel, because you don't know what you're going to like. Who knows? You might come back and just have a newfound zest and love for something that you never would imagine that is specific to that country that you're at.
And I think sometimes what you might see as a setback or a disadvantage is that kind of thorn that encourages you to seek out something else. You mentioned Italy, you mentioned Florence, but in your book, you talk about the crowds, the mobs now, and you say, well, when you go to Rome, don't spend your time elbowing through mobs. Get off the beaten path. And that's what we found in Rome, that there were so many people, so many tourists, that we took this little side trip up in the mountains to, I don't know if you're familiar with Villa d'Este, but there are fountains and water and greenery, and it was so peaceful and such a relief from the mobs in Rome. And so I think sometimes it's how you frame an experience that can turn it into, oh, this was wonderful, and I thought this was bad luck, and it wasn't.
Exactly. And over-tourism is one of the biggest problems that all travelers will face. You know, as the world's population increases, the most popular destinations continue to increase in popularity, which means more bodies, more people there, which means going to see the Mona Lisa, it's not that as great of an experience when you're trying to battle 100 people in front of you, battling for a selfie in front of you. So yeah, look for something else. Go during a different time period. If you definitely want to go to one of the popular places, don't go in the summer. Go in the winter when the prices are down. Yeah, it might be colder, but you're not waiting in line. And like you mentioned, go somewhere else. There's every place in the world is great to see just because it exists. People always ask, why are you going there? Well, because it exists, because it's there. So there are places that, yeah, if you go to Rome, go off the path, go to a different monument. You're going to find a lot of things that are just as wonderful. So many times the locations that are deemed popular are arbitrarily chosen. So there might be something even better if you just go out and look for something different.
Well, speaking of Rome, that reminds me of another section of your book, because in Rome, we were approached by a scam artist who would start telling you this story. And of course, they wanted money. And you have a section for women travelers in particular. And I think if you're a man or if you're not traveling by yourself, you don't have to be so cautious. But your section for women travelers, it's kind of scary, Randall, what you warn the women about.
And it was the first thing I've always been asked or told through my soul travels is, well, I couldn't do that, or you know, I'm a woman, I choose not to. Plenty of women travelers go by themselves as soloists, but both men and women need to take precautions. And if you're traveling solo, one thing you need to do, especially as a woman, you need to have someone contact back home. Just someone that you're like, look, I'm going to send my itinerary to you every day. I'm going to email you every day. There's certain apps you can have on your phone that will track your location. You can say, hey, I'm leaving, you know, I'm going from X to Y. Here's where I'm at. Have someone back home that you can just check in with. They can be aware of it. There's an application you can join with the State Department as well. And just being cautious, like you mentioned about the scammers. You stand out, whether you know it or not, as a tourist. A scammer knows right away if you're a tourist or not. And they can fool you with things like offering for help. And who knows if the help is even genuine. It was in Rome. Someone was offering me help on how to book the next train. And they were wanting money for it and everything. And they looked the part, they played the part, and I just didn't feel right. But I was told later that it was a scammer. So you have to really take, you know, crime can happen anywhere. And I wouldn't say certain locations are worse than others, because anything can happen at any time. But know that you do stand as a traveler, so make sure you reduce the risk and take certain precautions and make sure you do have someone back home that you are in touch with.
Well, fortunately, my experience has been pretty much the opposite, that strangers have literally gone out of their way to be helpful. And so I'm a little less inclined to be, not, I don't use the word secretive, but because of my experiences having been so good. Now, one thing that, Randall, I have trouble with white lies, even if they're white lies, and you suggest, yeah, you know what I'm going to say about that?
I do. One of the things I mentioned in there was just, as a woman traveler, and this is actually what I know what you're going to say, because this is what I did when I started. When I first traveled, I was embarrassed about traveling solo. So every time I met someone, they're like, oh, who are you here with? And I would say, oh, I'm with my buddy. He's getting something to eat, or he's on a different flight, or I'm meeting him there. And I just came up with small little white lies just to justify me being solo. And I mentioned in there for women travelers that if you're in public and you're walking, have your fake phone call to your husband or your boyfriend, or just mention everyone you're with. Say, yeah, my husband's on his way, my boyfriend's on his way, my father's on his way. Just mention you're with someone else as well. So I think that's probably what you're referring to on the web.
Yes.
I did them plenty. And if it's still difficult for you, then I won't pressure you to do it. But it does help. And just being kind of, you know, loud and letting people know that you aren't alone. I would recommend anyone, if they did feel insecure, you mentioned that you've had wonderful experiences, so you haven't felt the need to do that. But if it's your first time and you're going to a different country, it could help. If it gives you peace of mind, then I would encourage someone to do that.
My guest is Randall Green, and he has written a book for travelers. He happens to specifically address the solo traveler. The title of his book is Smart and Solo, The Blueprint for Efficient and Enjoyable Solo Travel. Now, one thing, Randall, I don't travel by myself anymore very much occasionally, but I have a chance to observe the person I travel with is a seasoned traveler, too, and I have learned things with his experience. For example, in your book, you say, compliment integrity when you find somebody doing something like that. And I remember one time sitting on a train toward the end of the car, and there was a door that was really hard to open and close, and people would struggle with it. But there was this young man sitting there, and this was in France, but he looked like he was probably North African. And each time somebody would struggle, he would get up and help them with the door. And I thought, well, that's so nice of him. And then the friend that I was traveling with, as we stood up to get off the train, he complimented that young man for his kindness. And the young man put his hand over his heart as a way of saying thank you. And I thought, my goodness, that's a lesson for me, that when I see something nice, a kindness, integrity, I'm going to speak up. And that's what you say in your book.
Yeah, and it's kind of a two thing. First of all, I encourage people, if they can, to be that person who is the one helping. But if not, if you do witness someone else help, let them know. I talk about just having certain mindsets while you're traveling, being positive about things, and that's it. To have a positive mindset, part of your responsibility is to spread that positivity to others as well. So if you see someone else helping out, hey man, thanks for that. That was really good. I saw how you did that, and I appreciate that. That's really cool that you did that. Just simple compliments like that are going to go a long way. And anytime you can recognize other people, and a thing I like to do as well after you leave a place, a thank you card. Send a thank you card to the Airbnb you're at. Just leave it on the bed or wherever it may be. Anytime you can have, you can make someone else's day, but you're just spreading the kindness, you're spreading the goodwill. That's what we need to do as we're traveling, because so many people are uptight and anxious during everything, and traveling can be frustrating. We've all had those times where it's frustrating, and especially when if something's delayed or whatnot. So I encourage you to flip it and change the mindset. Make it a great experience. Make it a point that when you're there, I'm going to make sure that I say five positive things. I'm going to compliment five different people today. And if I do see someone acting in integrity, that I'm going to acknowledge them as well.
Well, another example, we were getting in line in the airport in Sacramento, and we noticed this woman, kind of middle-aged, and she was struggling to help this older gentleman. And I'm just imagining that was a daughter helping her father. And my traveling companion, when he saw this, he said, that man needs a wheelchair. He got out of line and went in wherever he found this wheelchair and came back with a wheelchair for this woman and her, I'm guessing, her father. And so I think most of us would have just stood there or kept our place in line and maybe thought, yeah, they need some help. But you suggest take advantage of the opportunity, not let it go by. And I think a lot of times we have these good intentions, but just don't act on them.
Yeah, it's interesting. And when you change that mindset, if you go into it and just say, you know what, today I am going to look for five people to help, that your first thought would be, am I going to have those five opportunities? But once you have that mindset of, I'm going to do that on this trip, I'm going to find five people to either help or compliment or whatever it may be, those opportunities will arise. Whether it even be something small as off the when you're picking up your luggage and it's going on the conveyor belt there, helping someone else with that. And even doing so, expecting nothing in return but a smile or a thank you. Look for those opportunities. Look for other people that need assistance. Luggage is probably the main thing I encounter, but there's plenty of different things, whether it be holding elevators and that it, once you make it a point to just say, I'm going to do that today, it's a great feeling. And it's even better when you're doing it in another country and you don't know that person. One of the things I do is I bring a package of new socks through a nonprofit called Chasse Marjorie. And I bring a package of, it's like a 3-pack of new socks everywhere I go. And then my goal is to then leave that pair of socks with someone who's in need. So recently, the most recent time I did this was in the train station in Berlin. I arrived and train stations in Europe are havens for people who are displaced from their homes. So right away, I saw someone who looked like he could use socks and went up to him. I speak zero German. He spoke zero English, but then giving him the socks, and he was extremely appreciative. He smiled, he looked at it, and he goes, "Ah, America." And, you know, we just smiled, and I asked for his name and told him my name, and things like that. Just looking for opportunities to help others. And that's something that I've made it a point to do on every trip. I did it the next night in Piccadilly Circus. And it's wonderful it's wonderful to help anybody, first of all, but in doing it in another country, as a stranger, as a tourist, it's a feeling that it's hard to describe, and I encourage everyone to attempt that, because it's an experience that unites us, all of us.
Well, I've been inspired by, you mentioned helping people with luggage. Train stations, often you have to go across the tracks by going down and climbing steps, and if you have a heavy suitcase, that's not easy to get up. The down is hard too, but up these stairs. And so many times some young person, usually it's a guy, but sometimes it's a woman, who will offer, I do have gray hair, people will offer to help me with my luggage, and just total strangers. And I'm inspired by their kindness. You also mentioned you exchange names. And one thing you suggest for the traveler is to keep a journal. And I do that. I ask when people are just generally, I meet somebody and I ask their name. So in that journal, I can write down this person's name. So I don't have to say when I'm traveling, "You remember that lady in the blue blouse at such and such?" I can say, "Do you remember Suzanne who helped us with such and such?" So that's one thing that I also learned by observing my seasoned traveler friend, that he would ask people, you know, nicely, but ask them their names. And I was so happy that I picked up on that little habit.
Yeah, it's two different things for me as well. I look for everybody's names, and I keep track in a journal, and I put their name. And I also ask for their email, because part of the section in the book is just Tales from the Road, where I ask questions from other travelers, because everyone I meet, I feel I can learn something new traveling-wise from them. So I always get an email, get their name, and then I put what city it was in to do so. But again, those names, again, it has it organized. And you also mentioned about the journal. The way to do a journal for someone who's just starting, and this is a way to appease all your family members who are going to ask, hey, how was Italy? You have to answer those questions when you get back. How was Italy? And you'd be like, you know, it was great. But what you do is, while you're on your trip, you can either write it down in the journal if that's what suits you best. But another great tactic is to start an email, and you can just email yourself every place you go, the journal aspects of it. And then when you're finished, you can just do one long email to all the people that you want to send it to. So we're one that it helps in being safe as well. People are keeping track of where you're at. But I tell people, do it after the fact. You don't want to always journal right on the spot, because that way, people, you know, on the flip side of people knowing where you're at, there's also a negative that people know where you're at. So having that email sent to people at the same time can serve as your journal at the same time.
Yeah, I have exchanged emails that way also. I particularly thought of a couple. One day, I travel on boat often now, and going down the canal, I don't think it was the Rhone River yet, but I think it was a canal, and the wind was so incredibly strong that the two of us could not have docked this boat. It was like, it's a 42-footer. And this couple came out in this driving. It was raining, and the wind was so strong that it was blowing our boat, and we could not have docked without their help. They were total strangers, and they came over, and we tossed our lines to them, and they tied us up, and we had their email address. But that's one thing I noticed, that when I started being a part of this boat culture, which I never imagined in my life I would do, people are so eager to help. I remember the first time we came up to dock, and this total stranger walked up and motioned for us to toss our rope so they could help us dock. And those kinds of kindnesses inspire me. And you have what you call an emerald rule. It's kind of a variation of the golden rule. And you gave an example of the Japanese team last year with the World Cup. And I happened to have been in Europe last year and enjoyed it. I never knew I liked soccer. There was a new experience, but they are so crazy, soccer crazy. And could you tell what the Japanese team did after they lost?
Yeah, it was fantastic. But first of all, I haven't got to the boat culture yet, but you got me inspired. I got to try to get a part of this boat culture group. Sounds perfect. So, but the Emerald Rule, for me, I chose it because, with my last name being Green, it obviously with Emerald. And with the idea that every time I travel, I'm going to leave the situation in a better place, whether it can be just the land by picking up your trash, by picking up your litter, by cleaning up, by leaving the smallest footprint, or it could be like we mentioned earlier about complimenting others and just leaving in a better place. But as far as the Japanese soccer team was concerned, after the World Cup, they lost one of their final match, and which means they were finished for the tournament. And an athletic locker room, a sports locker room, I've been in plenty in my years as coaching. I coached high school football for over 10 years, and locker rooms are one of the most disgusting and filthy places on earth, especially after a game. Most of the time when the losing team comes in, they have no concern about the setup of the locker room. They just want to get in and get out. Well, the Japanese soccer team, after they left, they lost the match. They came back, and then they spent half the time just cleaning the locker room immaculately, swept it, cleaned it, did everything they can to it looked like it was spotless, brand new. Then they left a thank you card on top of it. So here's a team that just lost, very emotionally a difficult situation, but they took the time to then clean up and make a better place. And you see something like that, and you're just like, wow, that is kind of the pinnacle of what someone should be, especially as a traveler, especially as a guest. And it's how that's the mindset you need to be. And when you're the guest, this is someone else who's letting you into their country, into their home. So having that idea, and it wasn't just the team. After they lost, there were members of their fan base that were from Japan who were scouring the stadium steps and going through the stadium and picking up trash. And you see that, especially with a team that just lost. And it's a heartbreaking thing, and it's emotionally, most people in that situation aren't considered with keeping something clean. And these guys still walk around, and there were even some of the fans as they were walking around were in tears because they were sad from the loss, but they still took the time to clean it and leave the world in a better place. And for me, that was the epitome of living the Emerald Rule and acting on the Emerald Rule, is that when you're away, you're a guest. So leave it in a better spot. And doing so, you're going to be a guest more often because people are going to quickly want you to come back.
My guest is Randall Green, and he is an experienced traveler who writes tips for travelers. His book is Smart and Solo, The Blueprint for Efficient and Enjoyable Solo Travel. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My guest is Randall Green, and we're talking about traveling, particularly if you want to consider traveling solo.
First of all, it's that mindset of that I am a guest, and I'm going to leave this in a better place, and that I'm going to look for opportunities to help others, and that I'm going to enjoy this, and I'm going to seek out the differences in others. And that's where it starts, and that's the trip. The beginning of the trip, you didn't have that mindset. And if you didn't, that's the mindset I encourage you to create as you're on your journey, and then when you return, to bring that back home. But the other part about the mantra is having meditation in your life. And I talk about all these times of isolation, you're going to have the time to think, but you're also going to have time to not think. And you should do whichever is most important to you at the time. And everyone should do both. And that mantra should be times where you are expressing what you want and need for the day. When I've told this to other groups, they've said, oh, it's like prayer. Well, it's very similar to prayer, but you should start your trips and your times when you're on the airport and you're waiting in line. Don't see waiting in line as a negative. See that as an opportunity of, oh, great, now I can go through my mantra. For my mantra throughout all my trips, and this is something that I kind of fostered during the trip, but I brought back into my daily life. I work on breathing, and it's meditation, and I say things like, I'm breathing love into my heart. And I say that over and over again for about five times. And then I move on to the next. I'm breathing peace into my mind. And some other things I say is positivity, strength, wisdom, creativity, confidence. But they'll also anything I might be struggling with on that time. if it's maybe I was frustrated, I'll say I'm breathing in calmness to, and I don't say any negative words, because then you, by saying that negative word in the mantra, you're actually bringing attention to it. So I just look for what I need. So if it's while I'm on a trip, if I want to focus on that trip, that I want to be more polite, then it's I'm breathing politeness into my mind, and then I'm acting on it. And I just repeat those, and it keeps me calm. It produces a mindset that's constant and acting at all times. That way, when someone is in need, you don't think twice. You just help with the luggage, and you don't think twice, and you don't do it for acknowledgement or accolades. You just do it. And it helps me stay calm. It helps me stay creative. It helps me make the right decisions. And you know what? Probably most importantly, it helps me stay happy. And I feel that when I go to bed at night, I say in the mantra, I adapt it again, and I say, today was the greatest day of my life. And I have everything I want and everything I need. And I've said that in situations when one time I was even sleeping on an airport terminal because I had missed a flight, but I still inhaled and breathed in. Today was the greatest day of my life, and I have everything I want ever need. I was still, in my mind, I was still lucky and fortunate to be traveling. And even when negative things happen, by having that mantra, when you're more able to handle when negative situations happen and to be calm and to simply just enjoy life.
In that section, Randall, you also mentioned yoga, and I might add that if you're in a country where you don't speak the language, you can still enjoy a yoga class. Often the terminology, they use Sanskrit. It's like you go to a ballet class anywhere in the world, and they'll use the terms in French. And so a yoga class, if they're giving the words in Sanskrit, you say, oh, I know, that means face down dog. And I've had good experiences going to yoga classes in France.
What better way to meet someone? And then Airbnb now offers experiences. So when you normally would get looking for a home to stay, Airbnb now offers experiences. And what that is someone who's putting on for a potential yoga class. So you can go on there and find a yoga class outside the Eiffel Tower, practicing on the grass together. And how wonderful is that? I mentioned that yoga practice, it's not yoga perfect. And it's a lot like travel in the sense that you're never going to have a perfect trip. There's always going to be something that goes wrong or goes astray. So having that mindset that you do in yoga, as far as this is practice, and having the opportunity to do that in another country, what better way to meet someone? And there's going to be other people who are there solo as well. And I like meeting like-minded individuals, and especially like meeting them in different countries. So conducting yoga or any event that you like to do is a great thing to do on each trip.
My guest is Randall Green, and we're talking about his book, Smart and Solo, The Blueprint for Efficient and Enjoyable Solo Travel. But, of course, it applies to travel just in general, whether you're traveling by yourself or not. And I mentioned that I don't travel typically by myself now, but the things that you mention in your book, I've experienced just about everything you've mentioned. And some of them, for example, a lost passport can be a time of panic. And we panic for a few days. And then this very diligent young Frenchman tracked us down a roundabout way, because the passport was found at a train station. And so the story that sounded bad had such a wonderful ending, because we got to meet this wonderful young man who didn't want anything from us. Of course, we insist on giving him something. We got him some wine, but and including a hospital stay, 9 days in a hospital in France. But it turned out also to be an opportunity to see how competent, how caring people can be. So it's like you're saying, something that sounds like, gosh, I wish this hadn't happened. But no, because that's what you sign up for.
Yeah, and especially if you're traveling solo, because I lost my passport in Paris, and I missed a flight in Stockholm, and I've been in the wrong terminal. I've had so many things go wrong. I've had more things to go wrong than I can count. But when you're by yourself, what happens? When you lose your passport, no matter what happens, you got to figure it out. No matter what, you have to figure it out. You can't call mom, you can't call dad. And even if you did call them or you call someone else, they can't really help you. When your passport was lost, it was really up to you to take care of it, because of just the paperwork and everything that you have to have. You have to figure it out. And that lesson that you teach yourself is just, things are bad happen, I got to figure it out. And you figure it out because you have to. It's almost like having that, you know, sink or swim test that you, once you figure it out, you come back home and you're like, I can do anything. I was lost. I write in a book about how I was lost to the point of tears in Venice, Italy. Very hard place to navigate. Every building's the same size. There's no street signs and you have water obstacles. And I was almost to the point of tears. I couldn't get back to my hotel. And I finally stumbled into a restaurant, finally found out where I was at. And I just sat there eating the best Italian meal and the best, having the best wine I could have. And I just thought to myself, you know, Randall, you were able to get back in a time of crisis. You were able to get back to your hotel. You can do anything. And it's liberating, it's empowering, and it makes you feel that literally you can do anything in your life, especially when you're just forced to make a decision. Instead of, you know, you don't have time to like, well, should I do this? Should I do this? No, just get it done. And that's one of the best things about solo travel and travel in general. But solo travel, you will make mistakes. You will miss a train. You will miss a flight. Your flight will delay. You travel long enough, everything will happen to you at least once. And it gives you opportunity to overcome those. And it's just a great thing that in our lives to have opportunities. Like I think we mentioned earlier in the conversation is that most people in their regular 9-to-5 don't have those things to overcome. And I love having those things to overcome because it is empowering. It makes me feel that there's nothing I can't do when it comes to just doing regular work or finishing the writing on the chapter. It's like, hey, Randall, you were able to navigate through a country where you didn't speak any language. You can write this book. And it's a great way to motivate myself.
Well, even it becomes, I don't know, a new way of looking at life. For me, it was, because my tendency in the past was, gosh, I've never ridden a motor scooter. I don't know how to ride a motor scooter. And as soon as I did, I thought, my gosh, of course. So I say yes to every experience, every opportunity now that comes along. I say, yeah, I've never ridden a tied knots in a boat before, but sure, sign me up. Or the scooter ride over Crete. And so it has changed the way I look at my life. In that I'm not going to pass up this opportunity. Even though I've never done it before, that's all the more reason to not wait any longer to do it. And you mentioned something that when I was younger, I wouldn't have thought of. You say, use your legs while they still work. And I watched this last trip, how many people going through an airport were having to have help and be in wheelchairs. And I thought, thank goodness, I don't take that for granted anymore, that I can use my legs because they still work.
Yeah, I live by that mindset too. Is I'm gonna take the stairs as much as I can, which in some parts is great because, you know, you climb Sacré Cœur in Paris or in the Vatican, you're gonna have to take the stairs anyway. But just as that mindset of just getting out there and being active, which the best part about that is it strengthens you. And actually, you know, the sedentary lifestyle makes you more inclined that you will need assistance walking in the future, but by being active, you're actually lessening and strengthening your body for the future. And so, yes, get out there and walk and do as much as you can. And like you said, soak it all up and say yes to everything.
Well, some people listening may say, well, Randall, that's fine and good if you can afford the travel. But I can't afford the travel. But you have suggestions. For example, there are other countries that need that want to learn English. And if you're a native speaker of English, there's an opportunity right there. I happen to have taught English as a foreign language in Peru, and it was a wonderful experience. So what other suggestions? What suggestions do you have for people who think they can't afford to travel?
Well, I think people who can't afford it, the one thing they're not understanding is all the benefits. And you and I in this conversation about all the benefits we've had in our experiences, they wonder, is it worth the cost? And every time you first click that purchase, that's the first thing in your mind. Is it worth it? Should I do this trip? So I would tell someone, first of all, start small. Anyone who's not quite ready to make a big European trip or South America, wherever it may be, start in a small trip. Go hiking in the nearest mountain by yourself for an hour. And you'll probably feel when you come back, it was worth it. And then you can expand and do more. But like you mentioned in the book, there's lots of different ways you can opportunity. We know the big ones like Peace Corps, but there's also small ones. There's an organization where you can go and you can volunteer for as long as you wish at a certain location. You can volunteer. Imagine volunteering at a vineyard in Italy or France. You can do that to have your trip. You can teach language in other locations. You can run errands. You can be couriers and things like that. So there's a volunteering aspect as well. And then the last step of things is that once you travel, you'll start realizing in the minimization process of realizing how much you actually need, you'll also start seeing the benefits of things and you'll start cutting out certain things. For instance, some people drink coffee. For me, I would drink a lot of Red Bull. But then I did the math and I thought, you know, if you have one Red Bull a day in a month, then, you know, you're looking at $100, $150. And then the way I do math these days, I don't hear $100. I hear, okay, that's a flight to New York City. So that's how I hear it. So then I think I rationalize. I think, well, hey, if someone came up to you and said, hey, would you, if you cut out coffee for a month, you could go to New York City, would you do it? And to me, I would always say yes. And I would encourage people to fight. Start looking for things that you can reduce. Start small. And then also, like I said, look for opportunities to volunteer, because there's a lot. And what better way to pad your resume than to come back and say, yeah, I worked on an animal sanctuary in Costa Rica where we help turtles. I mean, it's wonderful. There's so many opportunities out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, there's one other thing, and I'd like to wrap up with this nice thought. There's a woman who takes virtue trips. And so she decides, okay, this trip, I'm going to practice patience.
Yeah, and it's something that I've adopted as well. This trip, I'm going to work on my patience. So this trip, I'm going to work on, for someone who's a solo, like a lot of soloist travelers, one of the reasons, is because they may not have someone to go with. But for the other reason is a lot of, they could maybe are introverted. And I've met many introverts who love to travel. And the hardest part for an introvert during their travel is to maybe make friends and meet people. So I would tell someone on who's a soloist, and if they have more introverted tendencies, that your virtue, the thing that you should work on this trip, is this trip I'm going to work on starting conversations with five people. That could be something for an introvert. If it's an extrovert who's traveling and you want to have a virtue for your trip, you could say that I'm going to make sure I listen to people, I'm going to be more patient, or I'm going to take chances, or I'm going to try five new foods. Whatever it is, set yourself a goal that you want to, that not just I want to go to X, Y, or Z, but something different about your life, your personality, your behavior, that you want to change it, you want to better it. What, we all have something. Every single person that's listening right now, who's read the book, or the person that I've encountered, we all have things we want to increase and improve and perfect in our lives. So find it on your next trip. You're a totally different person. No one knows who you are. So right from there, decide that you're going to improve something, improve a habit, improve a behavior. And for me, most of the time, it's being patient, or it's, like we mentioned, as far as finding ways to assist or help someone else. And I like one though that I really try to work on, because I think as I've gotten older, I've become slightly more introverted. It's just for me, it's getting five emails every city that I'm in, having five emails. And those emails were because I started conversations with someone. And my goal when I start a conversation is to talk about their interests. It's not me saying, hey, I traveled all these places. It's no, where did you travel to? Tell me about what you like.
That's another thing that I think is a wonderful suggestion, Randall. It's been such a pleasure talking to you about your book. I remind listeners that Randall Green's book is Smart and Solo, the Blueprint for Efficient, Enjoyable Solo Travel. Thanks, Randall.
Thank you, Nancy.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.